to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JustFoto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here every Tuesday, Cincinnati.com beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, anybody else relevant to the news of the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play and also listen the moment a new episode posts on our must-have Inquirer Bengals app. Let's go.
Right, welcome to a very, very special Bengals Beat Podcast Season Preview Edition. That would be the BBP SPE.
That's fantastic.
I mean, that's a pretty
double
nice,
hashtag.
Do we run them all together, or is that a two separate hashtags? I think you go BBP SPE.
Yeah, we can do that.
It sounds catchy. I like it. Well, anyway, this is our Bengals Beat Podcast. We're previewing the season. Special episode for you today. Of course, you'll get your daily dose of Jim and I, which you may or may not approve of. But we have a special guest this time where for about the final 20 minutes of this podcast, two of us sit down with Dan Hoard, Bengals play-by-play man, entering his fifth season, to break down a little bit about this team, where they're at. Can they get over the hump and all the ins and outs of where they sit as they get prepared for Oakland? So that's what's coming up later. But for now, you and I are going to talk a little bit of Bengals and where this team is at. I just hope that you can function even a little bit. I feel like we can go ahead and put a disclaimer out there for your performance, saying that you are battling through adversity right now.
Yeah, it was an interesting Labor Day, you know. Started you really
labored.
Well.
You labored.
Yeah, you know. Well, on the really bright end of things, I have helped run a charity event and back in my home state of Illinois, and came home to a letter from the White House.
Did Obama sign it?
It is signed, yes.
Notarized?
It is not notarized.
Okay.
But well, it is signed.
So we know it's legit.
It's signed, recognizing the group I'm in. So I was like, wow, that's fantastic. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm like, that is amazing. Like, if you went to Cincinnati.com over the weekend, you learn all about the Bengals cuts and read all these great stories from us. We killed it. Mm-hmm. I'll say it, BBP. Yeah.
Killed.
Yeah?
It's over. Crushed. You can walk away from it.
Note from the he man, did. From the president, the POTUS.
Yes.
Says,
you're feeling good.
I'm on cloud nine.
Yeah. Right?
And then literally, I'm packing up the car to leave, and my dad says, hey, your tire shouldn't, like, be split open like that, and you shouldn't drive 400 miles on this tire at 5:30 on a Sunday.
Mm-mm.
So trying to find, you know, tire places that are open,
not only was it
the one tire that was bad, but three of the four, so, you know, you gotta buy four.
Disaster.
So, okay, that happens. Make the long trip in, getting ready to come in, you know, and somewhere in Indianapolis, I bet you Lucas Oil Field are my house keys. Got to the door, all of a sudden, it's like 2 a.m, I cannot get in my house.
Andrew Luck is going to show up at your, and you're going to come home from work one day, he's going to be just sitting there, hanging out with Dante Moncrief, you know, just talking about life.
Yeah,
because they have your keys.
That was a very unwelcome surprise.
No, that's all right. But you battled through.
I made it.
You found a place to sleep.
I did. Apparently, trying to find a hotel on the night before Labor Day. You know, listeners know I've been around for a while. I'm still new, so I go to the front desk of a hotel and they say we have no rooms. There's fireworks. And I literally said, I don't know what that means, and walked out the door.
When there are fireworks, no one can get a room. But that's true, though, of the hotel downtown overlooking where the fireworks are set off. That's a tough spot. You maybe picked the worst night of the year to try to go to that Marriott. I would say definitely the worst possible day to try to get a room. But hey, you found a place
I
to
made
sleep.
It.
You found a place to sleep. You got a little bit power nappage. You got your coffee, so we can go.
Yep.
No excuses. Play
PvP,
through, play hurt.
SPE.
Yeah, that's it.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. That's it. Yes. That's it. See, you're already on point. So let's go into a couple of topics here. We had roster cuts. And we did a pretty good job, actually, I think, with our predictions. It kind of fell about how we expected. I think there were two that I ended up missing, and we had a majority of the practice squad right. With Chris Lewis Harris sneaking on, got me.
Right.
I thought there was a chance after Thursday.
Right.
Because he played so well that he might find a way onto the roster. But I couldn't go with I couldn't put him over the top the last second. But we had the 10 defensive linemen on point.
Right.
I just didn't think they would short themselves at offensive line with only 8.
Right.
And I didn't know. I'm sure they went the same discussion where they didn't know who the heck to choose from amongst the other guys. I just threw Dan France in there because I thought that maybe he was the best of that group. In fact, he's still on the practice squad. Probably tells you he was, but they chose just to short themselves.
Yeah,
They didn't want to lose other guys. They'd rather just lose Dan France if they had to.
Right. Yeah. Paul Alexander on Monday told us that he said, "Well, we can only keep 8 active on game day," and he felt, and he just left it at that.
Yeah.
And we talked, weeks leading up to this about the pass protection issues for that second team. And frankly, they liked Eric Winston and Jake Fisher and TJ Johnson's versatility to go inside, outside if need be. You know what? If they don't like 9 or 10, why keep that many? Right.
Well, and the other thing is, at the very, very least, for week 1, you have your active roster set. I mean, you're not going to keep a 9th person. I mean, my point being, if you had an injury that occurred, you already have as many as you had available.
Right.
Injury occurs on Sunday, then you hit the waiver wire, which is what you were going to consider really doing anyway. And at this point, after the first game, you don't have to guarantee their entire contract, which is something that a lot of people don't realize. So if you pick somebody up immediately, they're on your roster for the first game, the whole year. But after that, you can get guys, you don't have to pay them the whole year. So I think that's why we saw that. And then Greg Little making the team was the other flip side of that, a guy who sort of earned his way on with a little more urgency during the preseason, but we won't see him Sunday. I would imagine he'd be inactive. I think your 5 will be your top 3 plus Brandon Tate and Mario Alford. So the roster's kind of set, and I think you know Chris Carter making it was the other thing, but I mean, Marvin Lewis kind of made it sound like that was how they expected it to go. Marquise Flowers and Jason Demange both go on IR after injuries on Thursday, but Marvin Lewis basically said, I think that's pretty much how it was going to fall, that those guys, because they got hurt, maybe actually saved them sticking around the building for another year. So they hope they can develop those guys. So that's where your roster is as you head into the opener. And let's talk about this team. Let me start with something a bit newsy, which is Michael Johnson. So Michael Johnson, of course, had the knee injury right at the beginning of camp. Forgot he's on this team because we haven't seen him since the first week of training camp. Working his way back, I think the estimation is somewhere in the game 1 to game 3 range, he'll be back on the field. Now, when in that range you come, I think is a matter of perspective. On Monday, he was out on practice for the first time.
Right.
Do you bring him back? I mean, I'm not saying rush him back, but I would go an extra week of what you think you already should. You kept 10 defensive linemen.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think, the fact that this is his first week back at practice, how can you expect him to be in game shape anyway? And then Wallace Gilberry is healthy as your first, rotational defensive end. You kept Margus Hunt, who has looked better.
Will Clark took every snap.
Will Clark took every snap. And then the aforementioned Chris Carter, yes, who has been working exclusively as a rush end in the nickel. So you've got – we just named four guys that they're very happy to have here. Mm-hmm. So while Michael
Marcus
Johnson –
Hardison can play outside as well.
Right. So
I mean, you've got a lot of guys.
So while Michael Johnson was a welcome addition back, it's not like he had 15 to 16 sacks last year,
yeah,
where you say if he's healthy, he must – be on the field. So I think why not give it another week? You have that depth for a reason.
One of the biggest problems in talking with Michael and the people in his camp over the offseason last year was he got a high ankle sprain in week one and it really never felt right last year and blamed a lot of his lack of production on that and was really pumped about how healthy he was coming into this year. So why jeopardize anything trying to sneak somebody back into the mix maybe a week early? It's week one. Would you like to win? Yes. Could it mean something in the big picture? Sure. But you don't want to bring a certain percentage of your next 15 weeks into jeopardy because you wanted to try to sneak him in there week one when you have so many
right
defensive linemen that you kept. So I don't know that I see, but we'll see. He may play.
Right.
I mean, he may play in Oakland. And the fact that he was out there in the practice field on Monday makes you think there's certainly a chance of that. But how big of a difference do you think that he will make? Or I guess the question should be, how different do you think this defensive line really will be this year? Judging just by what we've seen in preseason in the camp. I mean,
I think it's going to be a huge difference because you are coming off a year where this team had very little pass rush.
Did worst not bring in the football, as a matter of fact.
Did not get the quarterback to the ground.
No.
Which was a huge part of Mike Zimmer's defense in the years prior. And while Michael Johnson certainly helps as the last defensive end to record double-digit sacks several years ago, Geno Atkins is you know, I wasn't here last year. You know, covering the NFC, you don't really get to see the AFC guys up close, but he looks like the all-pro,
yeah,
that you would see on highlights around the country. And I think when you have that guy, Paul Gunther told me, he said, look, that guy will make me look fantastic this year because
yeah,
we're going to get a four-man rush, and there it is. I mean, Geno's mm-hmm going to be Geno. And Carlos Dunlap and then a Michael Johnson who has proven when Geno's Geno that yep he can get there. So I think it'll be a huge difference, and obviously they feel it's a strength and have some, you know, athletic. I mean, Marcus Hunt, I know we keep saying it, but he's healthy. You know, he's looked good at times in the preseason, so, you know.
Yeah, the time is now for him.
Right.
He survived this cut. That we started to have a bit of a debate towards the end, and I'm
right
sure the coaches did too. Where are you at with Marcus? And where they had to give him one more year,
right,
and that's why there's 10 defensive linemen. You had to give Marcus one more year. There's too much potential there. He's just too much of a physical freak, and shown enough flashes to not give him that chance to break out and start to be that guy. We'll see how much of that happens. But you're right; it all comes back to Geno. I mean, in this league, there is no more dangerous position defensively to an offensive coordinator than a dominating defensive tackle. It's why those guys get paid huge. It's why Ndamukong Suh just got $114 freaking million dollars.
Yes.
I mean, you know, there's a reason for those contracts. If you can disrupt from that point, it ruins everything, and there's no real way to stop it.
No, I mean, I saw Sue up close twice a year the last 3 years going against, you know, Pro Bowl guards, All-Pro guard Josh Sitton up there, TJ Lang, very good, the best quarterback in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a problem.
Yes.
that's the best way to that I can project Geno, I guess, is
yep
in that sense. And Geno, it seems like, is a far greater pass rusher than Sue is,
yep,
in terms of just being able to create more problems in that regard.
Who is the non-quarterback? And this is a non-quarterback answered question. You cannot say Andy Dalton. Who is the most important player on this team this year?
Oh, wow. Outside of the quarterback. Well, I got to check my Paul Daner Jr.
The war rank, the rankings. War. I mean, you can go back to the war, which is I'm just segueing myself into what we're going to talk about next. For me, but I don't know if you disagree with me that Tyler Eifert is the most important player on this team this year, as far as ascending, as far as making a difference. Would you disagree?
I can't, you know what? I can't disagree with you only because for as much as we just talked about Geno Atkins sort of being back as a dominant force, I think the defense as an entire unit is ascending, is on its way back to a top 10 level. You know, I think at linebacker, until Burfict comes off PUP, you know, you can maybe say they're an average group.
Yeah.
But there's such strength on the front end and the back end that even if Geno Atkins has 6 sacks, which is good for most people.
Yes.
That, like, they'll still be able to generate a pass rush and be a good defensive team. You're right. Outside of the quarterback, you know, Tyler Eifert, yeah.
He's got to be the guy.
Because
he's got to break out. I mean, you can say no, not necessarily, because, okay, they could go to 3 wides more often, and if you get Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones and A.J. Green all playing great, Rex Burkhead plays a role, there's workarounds here. I mean, certainly. But for this team to be what it wants to be, which is working a power running team that works off play action, you got to have the guy that can do both and create mismatches. And the X's and O's of it are undeniable. And, you know, we'll have more on this in our special season preview, special section that's coming out on Thursday. So it may already be out if you're listening to it later in the week, but look for it on newsstands, which you just don't get to save very much anymore. Also online in the internets, if you're interested in those things on Thursday. But, you know, the X's and O's of the effect that he has on everything as far as opening up both the run game and the passing game cannot be stated enough, and his health cannot be. Does anybody else talk more about Tyler Eifert's health than me for a guy that has hated talking about it?
Especially, yeah, you're supposed to pass it off to me, so I'm totally fine with you talking about
that. And
Tyler,
I understand. I never had a problem, which I got to go on the record. I never had a problem with people asking me about Tyler Eifert because I understand its importance. I had a problem with people asking me over and over again when the situation was not going to change until you got to, like, camp this year.
Right, right.
So it is incredibly important.
Yeah, especially you mentioned the power running. Maybe some people think, well, Jeremy Hill's the most important. Well, the funny thing about Jeremy Hill is he wasn't even the guy at this point last year. They were more than
they were
happy
running
with going with
Gio
Bernard. So while Jeremy Hill has proven to be a very, very good running back, should he miss some time, I think they feel good about their number two, and then even to an extent with Rex Burkhead, who is not a wide receiver.
Rex, I'm not a wide receiver, Burkhead.
And yes, A.J. Green, but again, there's with Marvin Jones' return, I mean, you've mentioned this so many times, and we can't state it enough. The total NFL snap count, at least for another four or five days, is zero behind Tyler Eifert.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's you're right. That.
And we saw, and I don't know, we saw some out of Tyler Croft and CJ Uzomah in the preseason. I don't know that I saw enough to make me feel very confident that they could handle it if he went down. I mean,
not this week.
There were a few plays made, and I think Tyler Croft showed that he could be serviceable. But we really don't know at this point that they could hold it down. We do know that there would at the very least be a significant drop off early in the season. Very significant. So that's something, of course, to watch this year. Hopefully Tyler Eifert, for Bengals' sake, can make it past 8 snaps this year. I want to bring in Andrew Whitworth, who's great to go to for all things big picture. We did that on Monday, talking with him about this team, about how this year could be different, and just sort of the dynamics of where they sit entering week one. So we go to Andrew Whitworth talking about the Bengals' season expectations.
I feel like every year at this time we'll ask the same question, but what makes this team different that can get over this hump, you think?
Well, I mean, I think that the hump isn't even in this team's category right now. I mean, there's no hump to 2015. It's we got to find a way to win and win our division and go to the playoffs. So, you know, I think that to talk about getting over the hump is disrespectful to how hard it is in this league to win. I think too many people will blow that over. When you get to the playoffs, it's a complete different scenario. It's the best of the best, and you got to find a way to win. And we haven't been able to do that. But to get over the hump, first thing we need to do is win enough games to actually qualify to even have a hump. So, you know, that's what you have to do to win and to be successful every year. You know, you start off with the idea of we got to win the first one and the second one and the third one. And that'll be what proves this is a good football team, is to make it there again.
Is each team different, or we divided up, you know, 2011 as Green and Dalton. Is that pretty, I mean, or is each team different, or is this a continuation of Green and Dalton?
Every team's different, you know. So, I mean, the truth is, I mean, like last year, I mean, how many games did AJ miss? I mean, you can't call it Green and Dalton in five or six of the games he didn't even play in. So, I mean, you know, the truth is that everybody plays a part, and that's what I mean. You got to have your core guys that make you good, and then you got to have people around those core guys that make you even more special, you know. And so that's, you know, honestly the side of a good team is that the ability to have really good players that are your core, but also all those guys around them are guys that other teams want as well. And when you got that, that's when you start having more and more success. And I think that that's something that you'll see. Is that, you know, as this team goes and continues to get better and better, it's going to be harder and harder to keep people around. And so, you know, but that's a good thing. It's a good problem to have a lot of talent. And I think this team has that. But like I said, you still have to go prove it.
We're a good football team, and we have the core to show back. But, you know, the thing is like I said, I've been here years early in my career where I thought we had a great roster and we got our teeth kicked in. So the truth is, and I don't think we didn't have a good roster. I just think that we didn't play well. And so that's why I'm saying, I mean, if you don't go play disciplined, take care of the football style of game, then, you know, you're going to get beat. And this league is getting more and more parity all over the place. I mean, you know, teams are coming up and teams are still good. And so, I mean, you know, this year we play a schedule that every single game could come down to one turnover. Every single game could come down to, you know, a couple plays here or there. So, I mean, we're going to have to play really good football and have a good season. And that's really, I mean, when I look at the roster, I see a bunch of guys that have that kind of potential. But you have to go do it.
So big thanks to Witt, of course, for delivering the nuggets again for all of us scribes. So that's a little bit for us. I want to now turn it over and let's go over to what we recorded with Dan Horde in our deeper season preview as we look at the Bengals going forward. All right, now the segment that you've all been waiting for. We move forward in the podcast with your friend, ours, everyone's best buddy, Bengals play-by-play man, Dan Horde. How are you?
Paul, I'm great. Jim, yeah, nice to be on a podcast with you.
Definitely. Nice to have you.
Here we are.
This is my first one with Dan Horde.
This is the first time we've brought anybody else in because we try to keep you kind of
right
away from everyone. So we're feeling the season's here. We can let it all open. We can all share our thoughts together and see how, where this ends up.
All right. Sounds good.
Let's talk season. First of all, how are you?
Couldn't be better.
Season five, right?
It is my fifth season. Never missed the playoffs in the Horde era. Dalton and Green have a little something to do with it, no. But I like to take as much credit as possible.
Well, you also can't play well in the big games.
That's true.
This is what we're finding. I you're on the hook for this.
My playoff broadcasts have been wretched.
Wretched. I figure it's always the media's fault, so in this case we'll hang the L's on you. Let's talk a little bit about this team because you've been here since the reboot. And the question that I think we ask every time at this time of year is what makes this team different? From what you've seen so far and where you feel like they're at, do you feel like there is a piece that makes this team different than the previous four that you failed as a broadcaster?
Sure. No, there's no team in the AFC that has added three better players than Tyler Eifert, Marvin Jones, and the real Geno Atkins. I've been saying that Geno spells his first name G-E-N-O, But last year it was G-I-N-O, Gino in name only.
Yeah.
Like the Republicans, you know, Rhino. So he's back to being the real thing. And those two offensive players, no team in the AFC has added two better guys than those two guys.
Yeah.
So even though they are not free agents from other teams or draft picks, they are hugely significant additions that if they stay healthy could lift this team to the heights it has not been able to reach since 91.
The one thing that hangs out there over this team and this group is last year is sort of a what if. You don't really know. You can't judge whether it was going to be the team that gets over the hump last year because of what happened injury-wise. Now, everyone has injuries, and you're in many ways always defined by depth, but you can't have that many players at the skill positions, in particular on offense, and a player who's was really your most counted on, and they made him the most highest-paid defensive tackle a few years back for a reason, gone. I think that's probably the idea, isn't it, Jim, is that this is maybe the real idea of what this team maybe could have been last year. You can, in theory, if everyone stays healthy, actually see that now.
Right, exactly. And I not forgetting knowing what Jeremy Hill is, too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the end of last year, and Dan, you can jump in on this, too. So Jeremy Hill establishes himself because of injury, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the surprise, the good thing. Here's this kid who proves himself. But then once you get into the playoffs, that's really all there was.
Yeah. Correct.
I mean, Rex, don't call me wide receiver Burkhead, maybe establish himself there, started a baseline there, but you didn't. That wasn't ideal.
No.
So yeah, you're right. I think this group with Jeremy Hill and yes, he's kind of proven, but that's a little different from the start of last year too, right? The fact that there's that guy and you know what he is.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. I think at the beginning of last year, we expected those numbers for Giovanni Bernard.
Right.
He had such a great training camp and looked really good early in the season. Then when he got hurt, Jeremy Hill emerged, and now you realize, well, he's the number one guy, but Giovanni Bernard right. is still an incredible weapon.
They do. There's so many weapons, and Hugh Jackson was so good last year. I mean, we talked to him before training camp started, and he said, you know, if you ask some people, they might tell you last year was my best coaching job. And I would hear that argument when you consider everything that was taken away from him and for that offense still to be as productive as it was by the end of the season. There was so much smoke and mirrors to that offense last year. Obviously, once Jeremy came in, there was more than smoke. It was more of a hammer probably. But there still was a lot of smoke and mirrors to the offense that he created. You have to think when he has actual tangible weapons to deal with and you throw in that creativity – it's scary when you think about when you give a guy like Hugh Jackson pieces to play with. And I think that is why you have to feel like this offense could carry this team this year. Is that a fair thing to say?
No, I wouldn't go quite that far because I think the defense is the side of the ball that even has the biggest room for growth. Because, you know, that was a top 10 defense perennially that really slid backward last year, largely due to injury. I think that's the side of the ball that can really climb. But I agree with you that the offense is scary with all of those weapons back. And I feel the same way about Andy Dalton as Hugh Jackson apparently feels about himself. Statistically, it was maybe Andy's worst season. But when you consider the guys that he was trying to get the ball to, winning 10 games was quite an accomplishment.
Isn't it remarkable how the narrative changes to fit what people want it to be? What was the one thing that people said about Dalton for the first 3 years of his career? He won it because they had that great defense and all those playmakers. That's the only reason he's any good, right? It's the only reason they won games. Last year, they didn't have the great defense, and he didn't have the playmakers. They still were one drive away from winning the North and still made the playoffs again. But it was, and I'm not saying that Dalton had a great season, but so what's the excuse now to why they have been able to keep winning? I mean, at a certain point, the guy deserves some credit, and we hear it as much as anybody. I mean, has the criticism gone so far to the other side against him that it's just ridiculous now?
It already has been. Yeah. I mean, I think it's been there for a few years. Everybody agrees that quarterback is the most important position in football, if not all of sports. So you cannot accomplish what this team has accomplished over the last 4 years without at least a good quarterback. I'm not saying he's great. I think he's capable of being great. He threw 33 touchdown passes 2 years ago when that was, I think, second best or third best in the NFL, set the franchise record for passing yards in a season. So he's had his great moments. He's had his god-awful moments. Hopefully this is the year he has, you know, more of the really good ones than the 2.0 nights against Cleveland.
Yeah. And I think you know who he is. I mean, you know you're going to have some of those. And if you're comfortable with that and you feel like he's gotten over that part where he can make that hot streak, have that run when you need it most, you've got a chance to win games in the playoffs. And how many teams can't say that at all right now, that they don't feel like they really have much of a chance to win the playoffs because they don't have a quarterback?
Right.
And a lot of
half the league.
Yeah, absolutely.
If not more than half the league.
Have you ever looked at Ben Roethlisberger's stats in his first Super Bowl win?
They weren't very good.
Sometime. Not only were they not very good, they were worse than any Andy Dalton playoff game.
Right.
I believe his passer rating might have been, I wish I had this in front of me, but 20, something like that. I mean, he completed about a third of his passes, no touchdown passes, multiple picks. He was awful. The rest of the team rose to compensate for that.
And a receiver threw a touchdown pass.
And James Harrison made one of the greatest plays. Was that Super Bowl in NFL history to score a touchdown just before the half? So, no, that's the wrong Super Bowl. But in any case, the point is,
yeah,
sometimes, you know, we always hear the quarterback gets too much credit and too much blame. Sometimes the rest of the team has to do something to offset a bad day for the quarterback, and that's never happened in the four playoff games.
Right. Along those lines, coming from Milwaukee and Green Bay, one of Aaron Rodgers' worst games of his career was the NFC Championship game before they won their Super Bowl. Four interceptions, passer rating under 50 against Chicago, but his defense was able to knock out Jay Cutler, and B.J. Raji intercepted and scored a touchdown. Big defensive tackle. I mean, it is. To the point we talked about this, Paul, before the season, where in the playoffs, you do need the entire team effort. And what you were saying, Dan, earlier about the defense sort of maybe rising back to that upper level maybe means more than anything else, perhaps.
I think that the one thing that I kept saying the last few years is maybe there's reasons you shouldn't win. There's always excuses out there. But the one thing this team just has to look at itself in the mirror and say, if they make the playoffs again, just win a tilt. You got to find a way. You got to find, no matter what is it, how many years, I mean, the year you talked about Green Bay just now, the year they won the Super Bowl, they had more guys on IR than anybody in football. You find a way to win games when you have to. And to me, more so than Dalton and more so than some of the other things we talk about, that's what stands in their way. And we hear over and over again, or particularly the last three, four years, a little bit ago, the talk of, the Bengals are trying to get over that. They don't care about the stuff that happened in the 90s. They don't care about all that. That's true. This team doesn't know anything about what happens in the 90s. But this team knows everything about what has happened the last 4 years. And at a certain point, that's a mental hurdle. I don't think that anything about the 24-year mm-hmm. drought. I mean, I don't think that matters. This four-year is it has to be in your head at this point.
No question.
And the only way to get through it is you've got to have something that you can hang your hat on. So to that, what do you think this team can hang its hat on this year to possibly push itself to the next?
Well, part of it is what we talked about earlier with the return of really good injured players in Jones, Eifert, and Geno Atkins. And I think that really from top to bottom, it is one of the deeper, more talented rosters in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Everybody seems to be on Baltimore's bandwagon this year. The Bengals swept them last year. They won four of the last five against Baltimore. Pittsburgh looked great offensively last year, but they've had more bad things happen to them in the offseason than Cincinnati has. So I think the return of a really good core, the addition of some great players that were hurt last year, and hopefully the mental toughness to say, you know what, we're sick of being known as this choking playoff team. Let's go out and get it done.
Yeah. And I to me, you can hang your hat on this running game if it churns. I mean, I feel like you can line up with the threat of 18 and the threat of 85, and you can run the ball. And I don't know how many people can stop it if Jeremy Hill is who he was last year and this offensive line is what it was last year. To me, I think this team can absolutely hang its hat on that and win games. And that's proven to win a lot of games in January over the recent seasons.
And that's kind of why I brought it up a little bit earlier, Dan. Is that, in your opinion, is that maybe the biggest difference if you were to look at the last four playoff runs that you have in your prime, top tier? Paul and I debated at the start of the season, borderline all-pro, that level of a guy back there. I mean, where do you sort of – do you agree with that sentiment, I guess, that maybe that hammer that Jeremy Hill presents in that offensive line could be the thing that you – that does get him over the top, even if the defense is a top five or even if Tyler Eifert catches 9 touchdowns?
Yeah, I do, as long as they have the passing threat to go with it. We saw in the playoffs last year that that alone can't do it. You've got to have the threat – of A.J. Green and the other guys, and they didn't have that in Indianapolis. A.J. missed the game. Both tight ends missed the game. Marvin Jones missed the season. So when you get to that time of the season, teams are too good to just say, all right, we're going to run it 40 times and beat you. But when you have the capability of airing it out and you have Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard, now you got a chance.
Yeah. So let's do this. Let's run down a few of these questions and hash this out. What's your biggest concern about this team?
Well, you know, even as we spend time talking about how Andy takes too much heat, it's still a concern.
Yeah.
He can't have the just give you no chance to win kind of performances that he's had from time to time. So I put that at the top of the list. I guess linebacker, if I had to identify a position group that's the biggest question mark for me, that would be it. We don't know about Vontez's status. Hopefully that when he's off the PUP list, he'll be the guy that he's been in the past. But until he gets out there and does it, we don't know. And he's really only the high-level guy they've got in that position group. Yeah. The other guys are fine, but he's the difference maker. So I guess those are my biggest concerns.
Yeah, Vontez is certainly amongst them. For me, you know, a few things. Offensively, I worry a bit about skill position depth in a way. You have
at wide receiver.
At wide receiver and receiving tight end. Okay. I mean, you have Tyler Eifert, but until I see him go through a whole season where he plays in every game, including the most important ones at the end, I'm still waiting for that. And behind him, you have 0.0 NFL snaps. And at receiver, you have three excellent receivers. You like what you've seen from Rex Burkhead. If something happens to them, you are very average and mediocre, and you're right back where you were last year in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
In a league of attrition, you worry if the Bengals did enough to keep what happened last year from happening again, should you see injuries at the skill positions.
I guess what I don't know, though, is how does, you know, their fourth, fifth, and sixth receivers compare to everybody else's?
Right.
You know, if you lose one or more of your top three guys, isn't that the case for everybody? You can only have so many great ones.
And what's interesting about that is we'll know right away, at least in the division, because after Steve Smith, who's catching the ball in Baltimore right now, and, you know, with Martavis Bryant being suspended after Antonio Brown, you're kind of wondering, is Marcus Wheaton, Sammy Coates, you know, was your NFL snap? So at least in you know, Terrell Pryor made the team and as a receiver in Cleveland. So, no, you're right. I mean, it's a legitimate concern, Paul, but I think you're right, Dan, where it's, again, that end of room is always a little sketchy. But I would say if there's a concern for me, it would be at linebacker, which just to see if, again, depth-wise almost, P.J. Dawson is totally flash. Is he ready to be on the field a ton if A.J. Hawk tweaks something, or Vinny Wright tweaks something. Emmanuel Lemieux is still kind of nursing a hamstring a little bit. So, but you know what, though? That's to me, that shows the sign of a strong team overall. That it's very specific, very limited concerns, right?
Well, yeah, and let's look bigger picture at this defense, because it's easy to say, well, Geno's going to be back to health, and they brought Michael Johnson, and hopefully he heals and plays at 100%, and you like the emergence of guys at corner, you like their all these things. But one thing that's for that top 10 perennial defense was Mike Zimmer's, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's the elephant in the room of, was that all a Zim concoction? Was he the guy that brought all that out, or was it the personnel? At the end of last year, Paul Gunther very openly said, well, I didn't have the guys. And there's a lot to that. Injuries, certainly. Geno being a all of that. Is there a thought out there that, well, is it now or never? I mean, these are the guys you got to have. It's got to be now. I mean, with for him more than it is about the players. I don't know. That's a terrible question. I don't know what my question was supposed to be.
Yeah. Is Paul Gunther on the hot seat in year two?
I don't want to put it on the hot seat, but I mean, isn't it on him at some point?
Well, if he's got a healthy unit, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Zimmer might be the best defensive coordinator in the NFL. So Paul Gunther was trying to fill size 18 triple D shoes. Mm-hmm. Very hard to do. That's where I lean on people that have more expertise than I do to try to determine how good he was at his job last year. So somebody like Dave Lapham that can watch the tape after a game and see things that we would never see. And Lapp said he did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And X's and O's wise, it's not significantly different from Zim. Now, Zim's ability to motivate and, you know, get to the heart of a guy is special. There are only a handful of guys that can do it the way he does it, and it's different for Paul Gunther. But I trust the experts that they liked what they saw from Paul, and with a healthy team out there, I think the defense is going to bounce back in a big way.
And for what it's worth, those guys in the locker room love Paul Gunther.
Yeah.
Anytime you talk to him, we have a great defensive coordinator. You know, we believe in what he's doing, and honestly, that's half the battle in the fact that those guys, at least going into 2015, have bought in and think that he's going to put them in the positions to be great.
So is this the year? Let's wrap it here. Do you feel like the construction of this team, the setup of the AFC and the way it is this the year that the 24-year drought is a thing of the past?
I will answer that with a qualifier. I think the Bengals are a better team. I think because of the West Coast schedule, four West Coast games, playing both Western divisions, which are very good for the most part from top to bottom, I don't expect the record to be significantly better. In fact, I think it'll be a half game worse. I'm thinking 10-6. So how do they win a playoff game? By winning the division at 10-6 and getting a home game.
Yeah.
If they win the division and play at home, they will win a playoff game.
You don't see a Chargers deja vu.
I do not see that happening again. That's the one playoff game in the last 4 years that they have no excuse for. They should have won that game. It was a horrible second half, and they blew it, and they'll admit it. But if they can win the division at 10-6, because the Ravens and Steelers have the same schedule difficulties that they do. In fact, the Steelers' schedule is even a little bit harder. So if the Bengals can win it at 10-6 and play a home playoff game, they will win it.
Do you think that 10-6 would be enough? I mean, I guess it's too early at this point to be speculating. But, I mean, with the division being what it is, with everybody having to play all these West Coast trips, I mean, I always look back to continuity. And you talk about, you know, what they have right now helps them particularly early in the season, whereas Pittsburgh and Baltimore, they're so good at turnover. They have been, I mean, at getting young guys in and making them immediately make plays. But early in the season, the continuity the Bengals have had through this, I think can help them jump out to a quick start, maybe where some of those other teams would struggle mm-hmm. beating themselves a little bit. I think they can make hay towards that in the first month, and it'd be a big deal for them.
Yeah, I know schedules are tough. I'm kind of one of those guys who just thinks that it's always a little overblown on our end because
you don't know.
Yeah, you don't know it. But I do understand the trips, the actual physical flying out to the West Coast. But no, you're right, Paul. I think we both agree that I think early on this team can make some hay, especially, you know, that you want to call them easy. But with some home games against tough Seattle at home, hey, Seattle, it's just as hard for them to go on the road as it is for a team in this time zone to go there.
I think it's harder. I think it's harder to come east.
Some advantageous home games. You're right, Paul. I think early on it sets up a little better for a hot start.
You're right. Sometimes the schedule stuff turns out to be completely different from what you expect. Teams that you think that are going to be good have a bunch of injuries and they stink. But at least on paper, we think that the NFC West and the AFC West are both good divisions. All three teams from the AFC North have to play those teams, so it's pretty much even for them all. So I don't think anybody in the AFC North is going to win 12 or 13 games. Maybe somebody wins 11. Maybe it's Cincinnati. That would probably do it, in my opinion.
We do know that those two Western divisions can't possibly be worse than the NFC South was last year. That's, I mean, let's be honest. Yeah. And that was really what it is. I mean, that's why you ended up with three teams in the playoffs. I won't give away my prediction, which comes out in our special section on Thursday, but let's just say I have a whole lot of trouble getting over the stats 57-6, which is how they've been outscored in the second half of their four playoff games. There's something there that's bigger than anything that we understand, because that number is undeniable, and I don't understand it. I don't pretend to, but I am also –
So why are you a slave to it?
That's the question I asked too.
It's just a number.
It's just a number. Sure, I'm sure it is. But anyway, Dan, thanks again for coming on the podcast. We appreciate it as always. It's always a pleasure to hang out with you. And I don't get my time with you. I get to go through the cut man, but I get to come on pregames every week. It's always a joy.
And we enjoy reading you on www. The last guy that still uses the W's. But thanks for having me on.
Of course.
And kudos on the look back to the 2005 season podcast.
Thanks.
They made for excellent listening on my runs.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I enjoy podcasts when I'm running, and they were great. So congrats on a job well done.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I think Willie Anderson made me want to go for a run, and that's pretty rare. I mean, that dude had some – and he was pumped. I loved him, though. I appreciate it. And, again, thanks again for joining us, and hopefully we'll have you on again sometime soon.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Dan. So there it is. Our season preview, our BBP SPE, is coming to a wrap. Much thanks again to Dan Hort for joining us. So, end of the podcast, where some of our even most loyal listeners begin to tune out and decide to stop their run. Let's go ahead and give it a wrap. Let's spill real quickly, because we like to throw some teasers out there. Let's go ahead and spill our season predictions, which will be read on Thursday, but for those that are hardcore listeners, I need to give them a little sneak peek. So what, after assessing the entire situation throughout the off season, analyzing night and day, grinding over tape deep in the Cincinnati Enquirer bunker, what did you come up with for your season prediction?
I think I have to fall in line with Mr. Horde, and that I do think, although I will not put a caveat that he did with the Bengals, I do believe this is the year that the drought is ended.
Wow.
In the postseason. I think that does come with a division title, hence a home game. A lot of the things we just talked about with especially with the defense, with the hammer Jeremy Hill, I think those are just some things that will push them at least to that point. I think the AFC is too strong up top to say, hey, everyone, book your room in San Francisco for Super Bowl 50.
Yeah.
But I do think they are good enough, and this will be the year for that drought to end.
You do think that. I, for better or for worse, have been around here for a little bit longer. I understand where you're coming from, because you just want to say, look how good this team is. How could they not win a playoff game? What, you don't need to believe what's happened in the past. This is every year's different. It's a new NFL. Teams emerge and fall every year, Jim.
Exactly.
There's no reason to believe that that could possibly happen, and then you live it. And then you see it. And then you get embarrassed picking a certain team to break a certain streak multiple times, and you're sick of it. You're sick of this shame that you have to feel because you put your neck out there. And at the end of the day, like I just said, 57-6. I think the Bengals are going to get out to a roaring start. I think they're going to start out 4-0. I think their continuity they have is going to really help them early in the year, and they're going to get out to a quick start. I think they start to fall off a little bit, but I still think they go. I think they win the North, and then I think it's another playoff debacle. I just do. I can't get past 57-6. It's just ridiculous. I'm not going to go any more into that number, but so that's my – we differ.
We do.
We do differ. And that's good. You know, they're different perspectives, and we can – well, although it'll be just talk until January, assuming right. they make it to January.
Right.
If they don't make it to January, then we'll have many other different things that we probably right. could discuss, namely – there's going to be a lot of people wondering who's going to be back
right.
if this team doesn't make it to right. January it when you consider all the talent.
That they didn't make it to January. They should make it to January.
Well, we would possibly be blamed. I can only tell you there's a good chance we'll probably take some hits. if this team doesn't make it to right. January, I can tell you that we may want to bunker up a little bit.
Right.
Because there's going to be some salvos fired in our direction. It's always the media's fault, Jim. You know
right,
that.
It is. I forgot.
So anyway, we are wrapping up here our season preview edition. Hope make sure you pick up the season preview. Give that a read. We put a lot of time and effort into it. I think you're really going to like it. A lot of good stuff in there. And, of course, every Tuesday from this point forward, we have our run at Moreline Lager House. Depending on when you're listening to this, on Tuesday leading up to the opener, Jeremy Hill, our guest. And then the next Tuesday after the Oakland game, assume he's still healthy, tight end Tyler Eifert will be joining us. So there's your little bit of news breakage on that. But we are off to Oakland. Jim's you're heading out on Friday,
yeah.
right? Luckily, we're not flying together, so there's not
no.
a chance for any, faux pas. Although last time, it should be mentioned, you drove back from Indianapolis.
I did.
And my car was parked in the Bengals lot under the stadium. You pull up outside of the gate. My car was all the way down in the middle of the lot. And you said, all right, we'll see ya. So what do you mean, we'll see ya? You couldn't go up. The gate, they'll open the gate for us. You couldn't drive all. You're going to make me walk with my bags all the way down to the other side of the parking lot rather than going in there and dropping me off at the car? We got to work on this. We're off to a rocky start. That's all I'm saying.
I got nothing to add.
Hey, I'm
that.
Just happy that your car tires didn't explode when we were both in the car.
That, you know what? That's a good thing.
It probably worked out.
You know what? Maybe if I would have. No, you made me drive in there anyway, so maybe that's why they.
Maybe that's when
maybe
it
that
happened.
Extra 400 feet of.
That's what truck. It was. It put it over the top.
It did.
Let me just tell you, next time that I have to drop you off anywhere, I'm doing it like 150 yards away. No matter where it is. Oh, is that your house on 9th Street? All right, I'll stop on 7th. Anyway, so play that. You're headed out to Oakland on Friday. I'll be out there Saturday. So we're covering both ends of it. I'll be back early on Monday because it's a complete logistical nightmare getting back from Oakland in time for possibly anything happening back here. But we'll still have you covered. Make sure you check out Cincinnati.com. Get the Bengals app, please. It's available on Android and also for iPhone. We got everything on there. It's really easy to listen to the podcast. All your you want that thing. So get that. While we're in Oakland, since we're going to Oakland, I think we have to go out with something with some Oaktown flavor. So, when I think Oaktown flavor, even though he is pretty broke, I got to go back. You got to go back hammer. And how much did we talk with Dan Horde about the key to this team being the hammer, Jeremy
yeah.
Hill? He's the hammer.
That's true. I do have to say this for my own credibility.
Yeah,
I would prefer that we go with like Richie Rich. He's my one of my favorite Oakland rappers.
Yeah, Too Short.
Yeah, you got a real well. Too Short. Of course.
There's no clean version.
No, and Richie Rich, like you got to really love West Coast hip hop. To like, he's one of them dudes. You know that
yeah.
he kind of had a little bit of a moment in the mid '90s. But I get Hammer. The treadmill people will love Hammer.
The treadmill people, because uh oh, here comes the Hammer. That's right. We'll bring with that. And it's really kind of a theme for the Bengals season. Maybe next year when they make out the 2015 Bengals highlight video for their half-hour spot on NFL Network, the slogan of the year, instead of fighting to the end or building the foundation, whatever the heck the stupid slogans they come with, it'll be, uh-oh, here comes the hammer.
You know what?
If that is the theme, that means things probably went pretty well for the Bengals this year.
Like they won a playoff game.
in your opinion. You've not been burnt before. Thank you, MC Hammer, for joining us. We're going to head to Oaktown and talk to you again next week. We'll see you next Tuesday.